Welcome back to the Deep Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner and good friends at Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my Homewood homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, the quarterfinal weekend has arrived. Four incredible games on tap. Lots of crazy results from last week dive into as we break down these four games. And lots to get to. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, you had an opening round game last week at Syracuse. We're recording this early in the week as you are heading to Chapel Hill to do a women's game on Thursday, NCAA tournament game. But I want to hear about your trip to Syracuse. So you went up early. You went up a couple days early to like watch practice the day before and then called the game on Sunday afternoon.
I went up on Friday.
Yeah.
Travel from Baltimore to Syracuse is not easy.
By plane.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm too soft to drive. Anything over 4 hours, and that's actually kind of a little bit of a benchmark in the broadcasting industry. If you got to go more than four, you think about flying. So I flew to Rochester on Friday. And the reason that I went in on Friday was primarily because I wanted to be in place to watch the games on Saturday, to know what I was talking about, to be educated. And also as a dad, I wanted to see North Carolina Richmond, which was the first game of the weekend. And there were no good flights on Saturday that would allow me to do that. There were two flights that were, so I made the decision to go Baltimore to Rochester. That was it. There were two flights that were mid to late morning on Saturday. And then the last one was like, it was like 9:30. So I wasn't getting in until 11 or so. Hey. And it is a solid 90 minutes from Rochester to Syracuse. So I wanted to watch the games that game in particular. And then also I didn't want to be on the road in unfamiliar territory in a rental, you know, at midnight.
Yeah. What are your other options from BWI to get to Syracuse? Like,
I didn't explore a ton. I reached out to Bill Dwan, my friend and former teammate at Hopkins. His son Billy,
sure,
obviously plays for Syracuse. So I reached out to him.
Friend of the pod, former guest.
Yes, exactly. So I reached out to BD, and he gave me the options. And he's the one that said, you know, now that they don't have the flight to Syracuse anymore, he said what we used to do a lot in recruiting was we'd fly to Rochester and drive to Syracuse for recruiting. So that became my game plan.
So first time in the renovated JMA Wireless Dome. What were your thoughts?
It's great. It's a cool place. It was a cool place when it was the Carrier Dome, but now it's brighter. The video board is awesome. And the seats are blue and orange. Remember they used to be, I guess they were silver. They were just kind of the benches, right?
So it's like metal. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Metallic, aluminum looking. So it was great. And I tell you, the crowd, I think altogether, I didn't look at the final attendance. I think it was between 5,000 and 6,000. It was loud and it was rambunctious and fun. And that booth is always great because it's open air, you know, like you hear everything and the sight lines are wonderful. So it was a great experience calling the game from the dome.
And you are, what side is the TV booth on? Is it over like the bench area?
So you're on the bench side, yeah.
So you're like on top of the parents sections, basically the best middle seats. You're seeing the crowds from each team.
You can see them, but you're not like,
well, you're hearing them.
You're not right on top of them.
Okay, I got it.
And when you're sitting in back, you have to lean forward to kind of see everything. And I stand whenever I call games. I never sit. So I was standing the whole time. So I did have a great view. And it's very segmented. There was the crimson section behind the Harvard bench. And that was the only crimson in the building. Everything else was blue and orange.
Okay, that's what I was getting at there. Because when they had that run, they kept just, the camera would just show Harvard fans in the stands. And they were loving life. And honestly, like a lot of disbelief on their faces. But man, how things can change. And we'll get to it.
It was a game, and I was getting texts throughout the game, and I'm interactive when I broadcast. I'll try to answer people, and sometimes you take information, more times you're giving information, but people were like, "Oh my God, this is horrible. Syracuse stinks. You got to bury the ACC. What an embarrassment." And A, that's not my style.
Who's
I just
telling you
don't.
this? Is
I don't.
Erica, you gotta tell Erica to stop texting during the games.
Oh, how dare you? That's not my style. You let the game play out. Not to be cliche, but it's 60 minutes. But I'm telling you, Syracuse hit a bunch of pipes. The goaltender for Harvard only made four saves in the first half, but like three of them were ridiculous, like highlight reel kind of game-stopping saves. And they were fouling quite a bit, and they were throwing the ball away. So you're just kind of like, if all this stuff shakes out, they're going to be back in this game. And oh, by the way, this is a crowd just waiting to explode, waiting for something big to happen. So I didn't go down that road, and I'm thankfully I didn't, because obviously it turned out Syracuse came back and took the lead, and then Harvard tied it, and then the game was won in overtime, and it was a wild time.
Is there a better place for that, or when the momentum turns and you can just feel it coming? Like Syracuse is the ultimate spot for that. The dome is the ultimate spot in the lacrosse world, right?
I
Like, you
would
know.
say that's accurate, just
Yeah.
because of how loud it can get, and the setup. Yeah, I think that you're accurate when you say that.
It's something, and you can see it coming, and then there's just no way to get out of the way of it. It's like a freight train running. Well, it's super
You all
speed.
right over there? You're like
Yeah,
out of
I'm fine.
breath.
I'm contemplating that, and I'm thinking about this live read that I'm about to do about the men's and women's NCAA championship weekend, which is it's like next weekend. So all of you, I'm sure you have already capitalized on this great deal. But if you haven't, this is a chance for you to get $5 off your tickets for championship weekend held next weekend, May 23rd to 26th, men's and women's games, Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. Action starts Friday with the women's D1 semifinals and continues on Saturday with the men's D1 semis. And then all the championship action starts on Sunday with men's D2, men's D3, and the women's championship game. And finally, the men's D1 final on Memorial Day. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options by using the code ILPOD at checkout. That's ILPOD. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets, enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You're going to be there. Save some money. Show and say how awesome our Inside Lacrosse podcast listeners are by purchasing your tickets today using our promo code. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets and promo code ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets. All right, Dixie, we got into it a little bit, but man, there were some great games last weekend. The one you called was probably the best of the weekend. The comeback that Syracuse had. Well, let's set up our weekend previews. Four games, the quarterfinals, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. First game each day starts off at noon. Second game follows at 2:30 or 30 minutes or so after the first game. And all these games will be on ESPNU. First game of the weekend. These games are at Hofstra University at James M. Schuertz Stadium in Hempstead, New York. The Richmond Spiders, 14-3 overall, will take on the top-seeded Cornell Big Red, who are 15-1. This is a rematch of a game earlier in the season. I think it was on maybe March 8th when Cornell escaped Richmond on the Spiders' home turf at Robins Stadium by one goal. Lots changed since then, Dixie.
A lot has. And when you look at the body of work of Richmond, they've lost three games, the one goal loss to Cornell, the one goal loss to Duke, and they lost 12-7 in the season opener to Maryland in a game that head coach Jan Chamati equated to the first half of Richmond's game against North Carolina this past weekend, when they only mustered two goals and was turning the ball over and just looked very pedestrian. So this is a Richmond team that belongs, and they finally have broken through to the NCAA quarterfinals. When they played Cornell earlier in the season, they led after one quarter, 6-1. And then were outscored 6-2 in the second quarter, and then took the lead again, but then lost the fourth quarter 4-1 to the Big Red. This will be a great game. Obviously, objective number one, stop CJ Kirst, but Cornell has so many other offensive weapons. Hugh Kelleher in the midfield, Ryan Goldstein on attack, and Michael Long is another terrific player. So, and another guy that's really come on is Willem Firth, sophomore lefty Canadian who's doing good things. Richmond, though, very balanced. And I don't know what they had in their water jug at halftime in Chapel Hill, but they came out blazing. They looked hungry. They looked possessed. They scored a couple of goals off of quick restarts, being very smart. And they're just very balanced. You know, when you talk about Lucas Littlejohn and Lucas Olsen, Aiden O'Neill, Max Merklinger, you know, they all made plays this past Saturday. So obviously, Cornell is the team that everybody has circled. And I would say, in conversations that I've had, as well as things on, you know, social media and other avenues of lacrosse, I would say, what do you think? 85% of people are picking Cornell to win, if not 90,
In this
to win
game or
it
overall as the
overall,
favorite?
win national
Yeah,
championship.
no, they are the favorite. But I mean, if anyone has got to feel confident about this, it's got to be Richmond, who took a big leap when they the first time they met. Cornell came back to win it by a goal. But watching that Carolina Richmond game, the thing that really stood out to me is they're an experienced old team. The announcers gave the impression that they might be panicked or butterflies playing early in the game. But they didn't change a whole lot of what they were doing. They just played, to use the cliche, Richmond lacrosse, and just kept going at what they do best, and they stayed with it, and they did not panic. And they took advantage of any and every opportunity that Carolina opened in that second half. And I have If Cornell is the overwhelming favorite to win the whole thing, and they are, you can look at the odds. I think they were like plus 150 to win the whole tournament when the field was announced, and they were the heavy favorite there. Richmond's got to feel confident that they can win this game.
The things I worry about for Richmond, I agree with you. I don't think it was butterflies or anything else other than the North Carolina Tar Heels. And
Yeah,
that's a
they've won
fast starting, that's a
faceoffs.
fast starting team.
Yeah.
We've seen them start fast many a time this year, especially at Dorrance Field. This will be uncharted territory for this Richmond team in the quarterfinals, neutral site, excuse me, on Long Island. You have to imagine. Obviously, Syracuse is going to bring a ton of fans. Cornell will probably have a strong showing. They've played in this quarterfinal at Hofstra previously and had success.
Princeton will have a good showing on Long
Princeton will
Island.
have all their you know, gold, I mean, what the orange and black blazers and the straw hats and the banjos and the bow ties and all the things you used to wear when you supported Princeton lacrosse. Then you have Richmond. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the parents will be there, I'm sure. Siblings will be there. Friends of family will be there. But, you know, they don't have the rich tradition. They've only been around for what, 11 years. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, the atmosphere, because let's face it, they can't have a start against Cornell what they had against Carolina.
Yeah.
They can't do that against these guys.
I do feel like this is one of those situations when like a quarterfinal site you see when there's a doubleheader, the fans of Syracuse and Princeton, if Richmond gets a little going, their fans from the other two
They'll get
teams
behind
will
them.
get behind them and root
Yeah.
against, the big bad red of Cornell, who's the heavy favorite for the whole tournament. I could see that happening. So maybe they
That's a good
can
point.
galvanize the fan bases of the other two if they get a little something going and keep it. Although, those we've also seen that some of the times those fan bases don't come into the stadium until 2 o'clock-ish
Well, they're
if
having a good time.
they're out there
They're
in the parking
enjoying
lot.
themselves.
But
Win
yeah,
the crowd, win your freedom. So Richmond, win the crowd.
got to win the crowd. Yes, this game will be a fun way to kick off the weekend. Again, a rematch from an earlier game that was really close. This game will be at noon. You can catch it on ESPNU. All right. In the second game at 2:30, sixth-seeded Syracuse and third-seeded Princeton will clash in a historic postseason rivalry for the 11th time in the NCAA tournament. Orange advanced to the quarterfinals for the second straight season under head coach Gary Gate, while the Princeton Tigers get to the quarterfinals for the first time since 2022 when they made a run to the NCAA semifinals and championship weekend.
This Princeton team is loaded. I saw them in person a few weeks ago when they played Yale. They fought off a pesky Towson team that kept it close for 30 minutes, and then Princeton just busted loose. Their midfield, their offense is just next level. They really, really are. Everybody talks about Cornell's offense. I think Princeton's might be better. And I know that the Tigers lost to the Big Red twice, and once in the regular season and once in the Ivy League championship game, but Syracuse is going to have their hands full. Now, Jimmy McCool, goaltender for Syracuse, he struggled on Sunday against Harvard. And in talking with people, they're like, he had two big games this year, the two Harvard games. Other than that, he was great against the ACC, and he is the ACC goalie of the year. In person, Syracuse defense is so big and long, but they're undisciplined. And they took a lot of bad penalties, and they got away with a couple that could have and should have been called on Sunday. And when you look at their offense, there is no guy. They got a number of guys. If I had to pick a guy, it would be Luke Roa. Like his dodging and the way he gets to his spots and the way he can sling it from both right hand and left hand, he is impressive. They're going to go as far as their first midfield can take them. When you talk about Sam English, Luke Roa, and Michael Leo, Owen Hiltz didn't play great on Sunday, but he showed up in the biggest moments. When getting the assist that got him a one goal lead on extra man, a pretty little one touch behind the back, and then he scored the game winner. I think Princeton is the better team. The great equalizer here could be John Mullen at the faceoff dot. He dominated Harvard again. I was very impressed with him, not only his faceoff ability, but his athleticism and how he hustles. He had a trail check in a play against Harvard that was saved a goal for Syracuse, and it was in the first half when things were really not going well for the Orange. You mentioned the history between these two teams. I mean, there was a time where it was almost obnoxious. Princeton and Syracuse playing for the national championship 3 years in a row, 2000, 2001, 2002. This renews this rivalry. Atmosphere should be lit at Hofstra. And I guess we're wondering, are both of these teams, or are four of these teams, or who's making the reservations at Vincent's Clam Bar?
To the victors go the oysters. All right. Great schedule on Saturday, noon at 2:30. Must see TV for lacrosse fans. All right, let's move on to Sunday's games. It's like you gotta wipe yourself clean. Sunday is like a whole new day. And we have the doubleheader will be in Annapolis, Maryland at Navy Marine Corps Stadium. And in the first game, we have Notre Dame. Was unseeded. They're on an at-large berth to the tournament. We'll play the fifth-seeded Penn State Nittany Lions, also an at-large team. These teams have played regularly since 1989, but haven't played since 2014. Notre Dame holds a 15-6 advantage all time in the series. Notre Dame gets here they manhandled Ohio State in Columbus. Controversy around the setup of that game, but there was no controversy in the result. And Penn State responded early to a Colgate lead, came back to win 13-11. Dixie, let's start with last weekend's games, Notre Dame and Ohio State, some of your takeaways from there, and then we'll get into the Penn State Colgate game.
We're getting back to the first round of quarterfinal. That'll be Chris Cotter, Parker Carcaterra for ESPN calling those games. I'm not sure how much I'm going to be able to watch. Matt graduates from Loyola University on Saturday, but I'll definitely be posting up for the Sunday games. You talk about Ohio State and the misfortune of being slotted against Notre Dame. There's a couple of thoughts that I have. One, that's the way lacrosse operates. It's a non-revenue sport. They only allow for two flights in the first round. This made geographical sense. The other thing is Notre Dame wasn't a dominant team this year as they have been in the last couple of seasons. So they were on that, travel line, road game line, and this is where they ended up going. Was it fair to Ohio State? I don't know. Probably not. But at this stage of the season, you're going to have to play really, really good teams. A lot of people are like, well, Notre Dame should have gone to Penn State. Maybe we would have had the same kind of game that we had with Penn State Colgate. I mean, Colgate is no weak sister. They're a good team, and they gave Penn State all they could handle. Who's to say they wouldn't have done the same Colgate if they'd had to go to Ohio State, but all that aside, into the game itself, I thought Thomas Richardelli, the goaltender for Notre Dame, played maybe his best game of the season. He matched Big Tasty with 15 saves apiece. And it just seemed like after trading punches early in the game, once Notre Dame was able to, piece together two, three straight goals, it's almost, I don't want to say Ohio State panicked, but it was like, okay, now Notre Dame remembered that they're the two-time defending national champion. They've been here before. We got the playoff experience. They were able to take the crowd out of the game somewhat. And it was standing room only. I mean, that place was jam-packed. It's not that big to begin with, only a capacity of around 2,000, but it was a great sight. And Chris Cavanaugh was Chris Cavanaugh. Jake Taylor made a couple of great plays. It was the old heads that led the way for the Fighting Irish, in addition to Richardelli, which was big. Because we've seen Liam Entman dominate the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. Good news for the Irish faithful that he was able to, Richardelli was able to step up. So nice job for Notre Dame. Now they get a Penn State team that had everything they could handle from the Colgate Raiders and won that game. Liam Matthews scored late to get them the lead. Then they added an insurance goal. My concerns with Penn State, first and foremost, Jack Fression between the pipes. He only made four saves against Colgate. And I've been watching Frassion play for years now. I think he's a really, really good goalie. I've never seen him look so lost in a
He's
lacrosse game.
saving only 49% on the season.
Well, he was at, I want to say he was around 52, 53 prior to the Big Ten tournament.
And he's 49% after 15 games.
I mean, Saturday he wasn't even moving, and I didn't cover that game, so I didn't do a deep dive. But that's my first concern. Secondly, this Penn State team tends to have offensive lulls. You can't do that against Notre Dame. You just can't, and they're going to have to be on point. I think Reed Gills will have his hands full with Will Lynch at the faceoff dot, but Reed Gills has exceeded all expectations in taking over for an injured Kobe Baldwin, and will Baldwin be available for this game? I don't know. Faceoffs will be key. As we saw last weekend, I mean, Tasty still made 15 saves and lost by 9 goals. You can't have Jack Frassian only making four saves in this game for Penn State. If you have any designs on winning and going to Foxborough. And I think low key, what we need to talk about here is if Penn State wins this game, this will be their third trip to championship weekend since 2019. And they had disastrous 2021 and 2022. They weren't good either. So Jeff Tambroni's done a hell of a job in Happy Valley. And This will be a, this should be a, this has the potential. Let me think about this for a second. This might, well, yeah, this might be the most physical game of the quarterfinals. I think Princeton Syracuse is up there as well. But I think this game could be a real grinder.
I think the Princeton Syracuse game will be physical in a track meet kind of way, like up and down a little bit more. But yeah, I think this could be the hardest hitting.
Yeah, the black and blue game.
Yeah, for sure. As if Penn State and Notre Dame were playing a football game.
How about that?
That'd be the kind of lacrosse we're going to say. Again, this is the first game on Sunday. In the second game, Georgetown Hoyas, who took down 7-seeded Duke in Durham last week, 12-4 on the season, winners of the Big East for 7 straight seasons, will take on the number 2-seeded Maryland Terrapins, who are 12-3 now. And they just terped, they Tillmaned Air Force. Like they just, in my opinion, the most boring game coming into the weekend. And then watching some of it, just the most expected result of the weekend, in the most methodical way. The Terps are back in the quarterfinals for the umpteenth time.
Yeah, I was at the dome by the time this game started, and I was getting texts saying, "Oh my God, I'm going to sleep. I'm falling asleep," which is unfortunate because Air Force deserved to be there. And Maryland played who was on their schedule. But to your point, you know, Maryland made Air Force. That's just kind of how the Terps play in the first round of the NCAA. And you got to give a lot of credit to Maryland bouncing back from that loss to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, where they were dominated early and just never really was able to catch their breath. And then they'll face a Georgetown team. So it was really, while you viewed this game, the Maryland Air Force game, as the most boring of the first round before it took place, Christian Sweezy, our friend, reached out and was asking my thoughts on the weekend. And he's like, "I don't know. I think Georgetown could beat Duke. It's like the one game no one's talking about." And he was right. Not many were talking about it. And I'm like, absolutely, Georgetown can beat Duke. And they went out and they did it. I didn't think Aiden Carroll had it in him. He had another 6 goals. I didn't think that was going to happen. He has just been a man possessed. And is there anyone, I mean, if there was an MVP for the month of April and the beginning of May, I think that this guy wins it hands down. With Calif Fayaq now out of the NCAAs, I think the hottest player in the country is Aiden Carroll for Georgetown. And I saw Kevin Warren's post-game interview, and he said, "If this guy's not a first or second team All-American, we should, you know, kind of tear down the institution." And I agree with him. That Aiden Carroll is, if not a first team, he's top of the second team in the All-American. They're going to play a Maryland team. A lot of familiarity between the coaching staffs when you consider Kevin Warren used to work with John Tillman both at Harvard and at Maryland. And then Mike Phipps, the offensive coordinator for the Terps, used to work for Kevin Warren down at the Hilltop. So a lot of familiarity. And when you look at this thing, everybody that I talked to this week is like, "Oh my God, Tillman in the quarterfinals. You have a better chance of kissing Jesus." You might not be wrong. And the other narrative is when John Tillman has a week to prepare, which you're not wrong there either, but there's something about this Georgetown team and the way that they've put it together over the last month of the season since that 7-3 loss at home to Denver. They're believing, they're playing at a high level. Maryland is going to, I think both these teams do not want a super fast pace. They're going to have quality possessions, good looks on the cage. But you want to talk about, you know, defense. Both these defenses, very, very good. Who can win the battle between the lines and get more of those 50-50 ground balls? Who can clear more successfully? Who's going to play the cleaner game? That'll be the team that wins this on Sunday.
Again, that's 2:30 on ESPNU's second game on Sunday from Annapolis. All right, Tix, it's time for the give and go. All right, Dix. I have to share with you email that hit the DFly and Dixie inbox last week from a longtime listener who's written to us one time before. This is actually the second time this listener has reached out to us. And it's a long one, but I'll summarize it by saying this. His name's Logan, and he and his wife are about to have their first child. And the baby was going to be born on Mother's Day last weekend. And he was writing to us for some advice in advance. I don't want to get him in any trouble, man. But I'll just, okay. He's was missing a lot of the season, a lot of games this season because he was in like Lamaze class and breathing class and shopping for strollers and stuff like that. But he put that aside. He enjoys our podcast, and that's how he sort of keeps up in like an hour a week listening to the podcast, and it keeps him up on the action in Division One men's lacrosse. But he had a couple questions for us. So this is a new dad, and he's got a couple questions for us. Are you ready for them?
I'm ready.
Okay. He said, "What traditions do you have with lacrosse or any other sports?" And he has an interesting one for lacrosse. He says he always tries to see the last goal of the season and the first goal of the season. And he says, like, he'll be watching that Mercer High Point game on his phone. That's the first game of the year or something like that in February. And he's had to pull over on the side of the road driving just to make sure that he catches like the first goal. He needs to see it, with his own eyes. And then, he's a regular visitor to the championship weekend, so he usually sees the last goal of the season in person. Do you have any like that? Do you have like a I mean, I'll give you a chance to think. Like before every, I'm a huge college basketball fan, right? So before every basketball season rolls around, I will usually watch the movie Hoosiers.
We're not talking about basketball. We're talking about lacrosse.
He says any sport. He
Oh, any
says
sport?
lacrosse
Okay.
or lacrosse
All
or
right.
any sport. So I'll usually watch that. The last few opening days, if I don't go to the Orioles opening game, I'll try to watch the game. So I'll try to be at home. Or if it's they're playing on the road. So the last couple of years we've had like a opening day party at my house. I try to get for big sporting events like this weekend is the Preakness Stakes. So I try to watch those things and usually have some people over for them or something like that. I'm trying to like I'm not a big Super Bowl party guy, but it seems like we always have a get together for that. Do you have any traditions or sports things that you do?
During lacrosse season, I try to stay married. I try not to have my wife throw me out of the house because I'm so busy, especially when the kids were younger. But in terms of traditions, not really. When my younger son Owen was going through youth wrestling, the night before state championships, we would watch the movie Vision Quest. And, he would just kind of look at me like I was funny, but as he got older, he was like, "Okay, I get it now."
Shoot
Like,
the legs.
yeah, well, it's Brian Shute was the guy that Loudon Swain was going after, and he was considered to be unbeatable, and was able to beat him. As far as other traditions, I know that my sons, now that they're old enough, and even coming up, so Owen never played basketball, Matt did. So there's one March Madness pool that Matt and I would always enter. And he started doing it when he was in like the fourth grade. And now that Owen is a little older, again, he wrestled. He never played hoops, but the last couple of years he's participated in the pool. So the three of us do the March Madness pool through this one entity, a guy who's been doing it for like 30 years. But other than that, it was coaching my kids when they were younger in lacrosse. My wife and I would go to everything, whether it was a basketball game, wrestling match, football game, soccer game, those kinds of things. But never anything like, okay, on this day we're doing this or that day we're doing that kind of thing. But maybe some of those are the things that I think about.
Okay. And then he's got his second question. He's got three questions. It's a two-part question. When were you first introduced to the game of lacrosse? And then when would we suggest having his kids or any kids start playing, and like what age?
I think I was 7 or 8, and I hated it. I did not like it. I can still remember practicing at Catonsville High School. I asked to use the bathroom, and I tried to stay in the bathroom for the whole practice. And I think it was my dad that came in and got me. So I did not like it for whatever reason. But that, I mean, these days, I think my youngest, I think both my boys, excuse me, I think they both started when they were like 5 or 6 with the like soft stick stuff. And then they get into, you know, here in Maryland, you get into the pads and helmets and everything pretty fast.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's like, because Bennett played lacrosse like his like 1 year before he started playing baseball. And it was much more recent than that. Like it was 3 years ago. So he was in kindergarten, I think. So like 5, 6 years old. That sounds about right. Like
Yeah.
that's when the leagues start, and you
Right.
play like 5 on 5. There's no goalie on a smaller
Right.
field. Yeah.
Got to make 3 passes, all that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
but you wear full equipment.
Right.
You wear your equipment. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, and both my boys, Matt, my oldest, maybe a little bit more than Owen, my younger son, enjoyed it more. But again, they both. Yeah, Matt from the get-go with soccer, basketball, lacrosse was always aggressive, always confident. You know, Owen played soccer 1 year. He's like, I hate this. Started playing football and took that out like a fish to water. Did basketball 1 year. I hate this. Went to wrestling and loved it. The only common sport they have is lacrosse. But I think you'll know when you start it, when your kid, you know, really enjoys it. And starts to come into their own. So, you know, I would say, what would you say? I would say probably first, second grade.
Yeah,
But
he's in New Jersey, so I think he can probably find a league when his kid's like in, yeah, like first grade.
yeah.
Don't do it too early, because again, putting the equipment, a helmet on a boy, like if they don't want that can really, and the mouth guard can really be a turn off. So maybe find a way to maybe wait a little bit longer, and they can still
Yeah.
play, but you know, get a stick in their hand as early as possible, but don't put them on a team until, that's my advice to parents is always, don't put any of your kids, you're hopefully when your kids start, they will go play through college, right? Like that's the dream and the goal, and a reality for like, you know, people, you know, if your parents are athletes, you know, your kids can reasonably expect to have those same kind of opportunities, or maybe even be a lot better. So for Amy and I, who both worked in the sports world, we were not going to let our kids start playing until they wanted to, because we knew that we're going to be sitting on sidelines in the rain, in the cold, driving them all over the place. And unless they wanted to do it, we were not going to push them into it at 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old. It was when they started asking about it, like, hey, I want to play on this with my friend. And they're like, let's go, let's do it.
Yeah.
It's time. But we weren't going to rush that, because you know that the clock never stops once you start doing that, and you're going to be
And
doing it
I
far
don't know
after.
if this is the case with your kids, but with Matt, again, he took to all the sports, all and even played t-ball, and he loved that. Like he just liked to compete. He liked to, you know, play. When Owen came along and was old enough, he's like, I want to do what Matt's doing. Like I want to do what my brother's doing, kind of thing. So, but again, he didn't have the same affinity to the sports until he found the sports that he liked better than his brother.
And you and I, we're both firm believers in trying to let your kids play different sports year
Oh,
round.
yeah.
Take breaks from sports, you know, try a lot of different things, because those being a well-rounded athlete is good not only physically but mentally, and sports IQ wise, really healthy to try different things, play different sports, and not focus on just one. All right, and his last question, Dixie. He says, "What is it? What advice would you give to a first-time father?" And he says he's lucky to have some great role models in his life, but he's always looking for any more advice, especially from, and he uses this, an older dad like Dixie.
Oh, is that right?
He says,
Wow.
he does put in parentheses, those are Dan's words, not his.
Wow. Well, for the record, you're older than I am,
That's true, but
Pops.
you have a son graduating from college this weekend. My oldest is graduating from elementary school this year.
Listen, it's not my fault you couldn't find somebody to procreate with you earlier. You can cut that out if you want
No, we'll leave that in
to.
there. True, true. True.
Advice for a young dad. I think back to when my kids were born and I was still, I mean, I was still a young punk, you know, and immature and didn't recognize what was most important because everyone's going to be tired. Everyone's going to be tired. You need to have the utmost respect for your wife and, you know, what she's going through in terms of carrying the baby, delivering the baby, what their body goes through after the baby is born, the needs, you know, so you got to be on point with recognizing what your wife needs and your kids too. Like, you know, you're going to become very, very popular all of a sudden. You know, your parents and your in-laws are going to want to be visiting and spending time and, you know, family, friends, that kind of thing. The most important thing is, you know, your child is not a souvenir or a you know a museum piece for people to obviously people want to visit and stuff like that, but you got to recognize, you know, when your wife needs a break, when she needs help sitting around watching SportsCenter and other things, you know, while your wife is taking care of it. Now it's not going to fly anymore. You
Yes,
got to
that's true.
contribute, you got to help out. So those are some of the things that I would, you know, because life is going to change, man. It's like you go to the
It's it, big
hospital
time.
and it's just the two of you. Then all of a sudden you come home and it's like, well, what am I going to do now? Like, okay, great. The euphoria is over. The excitement is done. Now I got a screaming kid at 1 in the morning that I got to help out with. So.
Yeah, and there's as much as you do to prepare. Like you might take classes or read books, and it nothing prepares you for the responsibility. Like you leave everything, like you're in the hospital and there's people tending to you and helping you out and
Yeah.
stuff. And then you walk out there and they're like, bye bye, good
Yeah.
luck.
See ya.
Don't come
You know what? They
back. Like
might as well
seriously,
just
we
give you
don't
a
ever
swift
want
kick in the behind on your way out.
to. Yeah, the hospital's like, we don't ever want to see you again. Hope you live
Yeah.
a nice, healthy, happy, long life. Yeah. So I have a couple of things. The one I just thought of, you were talking about that you'll be really popular. But a lot of times when people have their first kid, they'll start hanging out with parents who also have kids. Like, you know, like you just, because you have so much in common and your schedules are the same. Don't forget about your buddies and your other friends who don't have kids yet. Right. So still hang out and still find some time to still have hang out with the guys and your other friends who other couples that you enjoy who don't have kids yet. And
You're just make sure you hang out with your buddies. The complete opposite of what I just said to take care of your wife and your kid.
no, I mean you have to do that, but I'm just saying, like, as a
Yeah,
couple, don't ignore, like, you know, your other couples that don't have kids yet. And just hang out with them. Because I've seen that happen before, and you're like, we used to hang out all the time. Then you had a kid and you never invite me over. And
that's
like,
true. Yeah, that's a
yeah.
good point.
And now, again, they might not want to hang out with you and your kid or be around a lot of kids all the time, but you find the right occasions and like don't forget about those friends. And then the second one, besides everything Dixie said about like really take care of your wife, is everything people say about, you know, being a first time parent is true. Like you will be tired a lot. There is a lot more work to do. You do have to like change diapers, and you will be worried about, you know, you fall asleep with your kid next to you, and you're like, are they still breathing? Like, there's be a lot of stress and worry and stuff. And that's all true. But what people don't talk about enough is the really good things, like when you're holding your kid and he falls asleep, or things are going well. The bad things are not nearly as bad as people say they are. They just kind of make them out to be worse than they are. And there's no way to actually accurately put into words how good the good things are. They far out like pace and outweigh any of the bad stuff. So the good stuff is so much better than people say. And the bad stuff's not nearly as bad as it is. And it's just a part of life and part of being a dad. So I think you're gonna be fine. I mean, you're already listening to the Deep Flying Dixie podcast,
That's a
which
smart decision right then and there.
Yeah, there you go. And it makes you, well, you know, in the top 5% of all people in the world. if you're listening to this show. So you're on the right track. You seem to have a great wife, and Nikki will be a great mom. And you're on the right track. And I think that is a good place to stop.
Yeah, quit while you're ahead.
Let's quit while we're ahead. And I mean us, not you. We'll quit with our advice because what do we know after all? A reminder that the DeFi and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Quarterfinals are here. We've got a couple more weeks of the pod, but there's still plenty of time for you to share this podcast with people that you know love lacrosse and might want to give this a listen. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you. Write us a note like Logan did. I also have someone asking for some lacrosse lesson sticks. I might have to, maybe if Owen or Matt want to book some private lacrosse lessons.
Yeah.
Feel free to email us, dflyanddixie@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.
I was listening. You said the same things over and over again.